Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the You Should Run podcast. I'm your host, Tony Heil, council member in Bridgeport, PA, which is in near Philadelphia, close to King of Prussia. And today I'm excited because my wife's family, my mother-in-law, and her family live in Rhode Island, specifically in Providence, which I think most people in Rhode Island live either in Providence or not too far from there, because let's face it, it's not that big. But there's a lot of really big people in terms of people who are doing cool things, advancing great ideas, and making a difference. And one of them is State Senator Gail Golden, who's my guest today. I'm really excited to talk to her about Rhode Island politics, and hopefully you'll be encouraged to see why you should run for office. So, Gail, thank you for taking time today on a rainy day to talk about your experiences.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
So, tell me a little bit about yourself, because the purpose of this podcast is You Should Run, figuring out why people got involved in politics, why they wanted to, make a difference. What have you always been politically minded and thought about the world like that?
I can't say that I've always wanted to run for office. I was certainly really engaged in social justice and activism as a child, did a lot of really interesting things. But I am an immigrant to this country. I was born in Canada and moved to the United States when I was in elementary school. And it never really occurred to me to run for office until much later in my life, but was actively involved in helping a lot of other people run for office. And certainly advocating for issues that I cared about over the course of my lifetime. But really, it was my own experience of needing to have paid leave that was what drove me to first get actively involved in Rhode Island in a way that led me to run for office.
So paid leave is an issue that I think has come up a lot more lately and hasn't really gotten the attention it should have for many years, or maybe it has and I just haven't noticed. Is it something that you think people are paying more attention to now than before, or people should have been paying attention years ago?
I think it's something that people haven't realized how important it is. You often don't realize that you don't have paid leave until the moment that you need it.
Right.
My journey into this world was that in 2001, I was standing on a balcony at my sister's house, and the balcony collapsed underneath me, and I fell 16 feet and broke my back.
Oh my goodness.
And in that same year, I also became a mom through adoption. And so I had these two life experiences in which I needed to care for myself, somebody else needed to care for me, and then I needed to care for somebody else, all within a very short period of time. My sister lives in Montreal, as I said, we're Canadian by birth, and my sister lives in Montreal, and the experiences of which we both became parents and both experienced my medical crisis were vastly different because of the policies in our two countries. And that's really what drove me to start getting active and talking about paid leave. Rhode Island was the first state in the country in 1942 to create a social insurance model that covers medical leave. So we do have a state-run temporary disability insurance that everybody pays into who's in the private sector in Rhode Island. And then California and New York and New Jersey also had those in place. But California was the first state in the early 2000s to add on paid family leave. So there was caregiving and time that you could take and still have wage replacement to care for somebody else, including after the birth or adoption of a child. So that became sort of my journey of things that I really became focused on how to make that happen in Rhode Island. And in 2013, after I got elected, that was really my focus. And we passed that in 2013, and Rhode Island became the first state in the country to have a job-protected paid leave, meaning that people wouldn't have to fear losing their job when they took that time. We also were the third in the country to create a paid family leave. And thankfully, since then, We have been surpassed by our neighboring states, and there are now 8 states in the District of Columbia have paid leave in some process of implementation.
It's very cool when you can be a model for other people and legislation and hopefully making things better. Now, you know, when people look at Rhode Island, they think, well, it's a blue state. It's, people don't even take it seriously for politics because no one's going to go campaign there. They're going to go campaign across the border in New Hampshire, maybe because that's a swing state, or even Maine. But, you know, so they just assume that if you want to do something progressive, it's just easy peasy lemon squeezy. In Rhode Island, did you find that to be the case where you started campaigning and say, we need this? And everyone's like, yeah, do it.
I think there is a lot of misconception about Rhode Island because we are a triple blue state. So our governor and both houses of the legislature are Democratic controlled. But our governor is the first Democratic governor in, I think it had been at least 20 years when she was first elected. So as you can imagine, it's not quite as blue as it might seem. And even within that, it also means that the Democratic Party, because we do have a vast majority of control over the legislature, is a very, very big tent. And skews, frankly, up until fairly recently, those legislatures have skewed far more moderate to conservative than the Democratic Party. So bringing in a big idea like paid leave, I had a huge amount of support, even from people who were not would not view themselves as progressive Democrats by any means. And I think that was really important in our state, is that I had the Senate president at the time was Teresa Pivoweed. She is most certainly somebody who would not describe herself as a progressive Democrat. And yet she was a huge supporter of this. And so things like that made a significant difference. But we have seen absolutely, as you know, as my career has continued, became the champion of passing reproductive rights into state law, really what a difference it has made to have an increasing number of women and progressives elected in our state.
One of the things that made me want to reach out to you, one, you have a cool name, let's be honest. And but two, I saw that you put a picture on Twitter about Rhode Island passing the voting rights for women, approving the amendment like 100 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you see the difference of electing women in Rhode Island and everywhere. What's the impact of that? Because in my experience doing this podcast, I've learned only one state has majority female legislature. And it just baffles me as a straight white male, like the lack of representation that exists for 51% of the population.
Yes, and in Rhode Island, women make up nearly 60% of the Democratic Party. So not having that representation in the legislature, the diversity of that representation, not just on gender, but race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, gender identity, all the ways in which we are have a diverse and rich culture in Rhode Island, it's important to have that in the legislature. But specifically for women, what it means is that when women are elected, we see that the issues that affect families and women tend to be the things that rise to the top, that they actually work on issues like paid family leave and paid sick days and take on and reproductive rights and sexual harassment and pay discrimination and things that are disproportionately affecting half the population and have been ignored for ever, really. And so those are really the differences that I see. The Senate in Rhode Island is now over 40% women, and that has made a significant difference in terms of the bills that we are definitely paying attention to in the state house. And I think we can definitely see that in states like Nevada, that is the one with the majority women legislature, that the priorities that are being set are different than in state houses that are almost no women in them.
Yeah, and you can see in Virginia now, you know, they're not majority female, but they have a female speaker for the first time ever. And it's clearly making a big difference in the bills that are coming up.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot, you know, a lot of women ran and won in Virginia, and they ran on issues that Republicans thought would surely be the thing that stopped them from getting elected, like gun safety. And yet what we've seen is those are the issues that the voters of Virginia cared about. And the under the leadership of the new speaker, she has really pushed those forward to the forefront and moved very quickly on them to lay out that these are important issues. And one of the most, you know, significant things was Virginia finally ratifying the ERA, which was, I believe, the first thing they did. And what a strong message that sends. Both a message of it took decades and decades to make that happen in Virginia, and that they were going to stand very clearly on the side of equality.
So you ran for office with family leave in mind, and you're able to successfully pass that. Are the motivations for what you're doing now the same as when you first ran? Is you clearly learned a lot. What have you learned being in office that either affirmed your motivations and once things want to get involved or change what you wanted to do?
Yeah, you know, I think I certainly came in with paid leave as being one of the issues that I cared very deeply about. I think that I have always been somebody who has been concerned about civil rights and equality and issues that are disproportionately affecting those who are oppressed by other people. And so those are certainly the bills that I continue to put in and address and also try and tackle how poverty affects our everyday in the state, and particularly the city of Providence. But I think one of the things that I learned along the way is that when you're in an environment in which there are very few women, because when I first started, there were less women elected in Rhode Island, that it is not only harder to get those bills passed, but women often feel pigeonholed to being the only people to carry them. And that's unfortunate, because something that is addressing poverty, while it disproportionately helps women in our state, is helping our entire state. So everybody should want to figure out how do we address poverty in our state. And yet, as more women have come in, I have seen that there's more and more engagement and buy-in to address many of the issues that some people would call quote-unquote women's issues, but recognize that they affect every single person in the state.
Yeah, from my experience, my mother-in-law, she lives by Hope Street, and which I think is just a cool place. And, you know, it seems like a well-educated area where she lives, and people, it's artsy, it's really neat, but it's also a working-class area. And, you know, she's talked about some of the working class struggles in Providence and in many other places in the state that I think people from outside of Rhode Island would have no idea about.
Yeah, so the districts I represent, which includes your mother-in-law's home, is the most affluent district in Providence. It is where we have Brown and RISD. We have probably the most academics and doctors and lawyers and living in this district than any other district, certainly in the city of Providence, but may very well be in the state. And yet, even within that, there are significant pockets of families that continue to struggle to make ends meet. I mean, one of the things that I often talk about is that if you just look at the earned income tax credit, how many families in my district that people view are as an affluent district, there's still over 1,000 homes in a district of 30,000 people that qualify for their earned income tax credit. So, you know, people are still working to make ends meet, and the rest of the city of Providence also has a significant barriers to growth due to a fair amount of poverty throughout the city.
Right. It's hard to attract businesses into Rhode Island when they can go to bigger populations in Boston and other places not even that far away. And I know the unemployment rate in Rhode Island took a longer time to improve than almost anywhere else in the country.
You know, it did. We were sort of first in, last out in terms of the effects of the recession. And at the same time, businesses absolutely have come to Rhode Island, we have remarkable homegrown businesses in the state, and so we might not have some massive employer of 10,000 people, but we have a lot of small, vibrant businesses, and as well as major companies coming into the state. You know, in terms of economic growth, what people do see is that we have a highly skilled, highly trained workforce here in Rhode Island. We have tons of colleges and college students graduating, and we are a quick hop between Boston and New York, and so there's a lot of opportunity for companies that are regionally based to be able to use us as a hub, as often happens. And you know, I love Providence. I think it's an amazing, vibrant city that has some of the best restaurants in the country and some of the coolest free art and opportunities to engage in the creative sector in a way that really draw people into the city, despite any struggles that we might have.
Yeah, I love Providence too. We especially love going in the summer for water fire when we get a chance. I don't know that there's that many cities in the country that have something as cool as water fire. If you're listening, check it out. If you're in the New England area or have a chance to go to New England, I mean, that's my top recommendation, is to go when there's a weekend where that's happening, because it's just such a unique experience.
It is. It's a very, so, you know, for people that are listening, it's, you know, an opportunity for, it brings out thousands of people. And what water fire is boats that go down the river that runs through the city of Providence, and they light fires in the river, and there's music that is orchestrated to go along with the lighting of the fires, and then there's kind of a street festival atmosphere, and it's just a wonderful, interesting, fun activity. It's been going on for years, and every time thousands of people come out to really enjoy the evening and spending time together and sort of having this kind of very it's kind of a very relaxing way to enjoy a summer or fall evening in the city.
So, you know, looking at the things I've been keeping track of your Twitter, keeping track of your background in terms of what you're doing there. No, in a good way, obviously. But if you are thinking of running for office, most people, I think, get involved in politics because of one issue or another, like you said. Maybe it's something that is a big issue, like paid leave, or maybe it's, I really want them to get this business to move from my neighborhood because they're polluting. Like, it could be a lot of different things. But mm-hmm. when you are in office, suddenly you don't have one issue you're dealing with. Is it overwhelming? How do you get over how overwhelming it could be to talk about, like, 50 different topics and manage that so you are able to tackle it intelligently?
Well, first, let me say that I think that that is often the barrier, particularly for women to run for office, is they think while they're running and once they get elected, that they have to know everything about everything, and it makes them very comfortable. I've had many women over the years say to me, well, I just think I need a little bit more training, or I need a little bit more knowledge about XYZ in order to run for office. And the reality is, that's not a requirement of running for office. Your ability to talk passionately and knowledgeably about a couple of issues that you really care about brings people in. And as long as you can do those things, people are willing to, you know, ensure that you have the time to give you the time to learn more of these issues as they go forward. Nobody is expecting people as knowledgeable and as well prepared as our presidential candidates in the vast majority of state legislatures across the country, particularly among those of us who are part-time legislators. And so we can't be generalists in absolutely everything all the time. That said, it certainly is a unique experience to have people asking about a lot of different things. And for the most part, being in a state like Rhode Island, where we are a part-time legislature and we don't have any staff, it does mean that, or we don't have any specific staff to us individually as legislators. So in many states, you would have a staff member assigned specifically to the senator, but that is not how it works in Rhode Island. So part of it is I have to rely on the pooled staff of the Senate to be able to provide me with information. But I learn an incredible amount by our hearing process. So, you know, we have hearings every Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday is the way our legislature works. And being able to hear those bills and hear the pros and cons, the intended and unintended consequences of legislation that's being put for us, in front of us, is one of the ways that I learn. And then I also learn from my other legislators and colleagues and learn about their experiences and what they're hearing in other hearings. And it's an incredible opportunity to grow and get more access to information.
So if you were talking to someone who's thinking about running for office, especially state legislature, and I think that's the most important election this year, probably in a lot of states because of the redistricting in 2020 or 2022, would you recommend that people, if they can, go to some of those hearings and pay attention and figure out, like, that seems to be more important than going and seeing how people vote on bills?
I think certainly knowing how people vote on bills helps you figure out whether or not you might want to run against that person.
Right.
But aside from that, yes, absolutely. Participating in the hearing process in Rhode Island, we are an incredibly open, you know, public-driven process where it's not necessarily timing-wise the easiest thing to come up and testify. But we hear testimony for anybody that shows up. If you want to come and testify in a bill, and you are welcome to do so. And then also you are welcome to just sit in the room and listen to the testimony. So it is a great way to kind of hear what's going on. If you are running for a particular seat because of something that you care about, like healthcare, going to a health committee and hearing what kind of bills are going on and what gets introduced and the arguments people make on both sides is a great way to learn more about what's happening up at the legislature. Even if you're not going to run for office, it's just a great thing to do, I think, to be able to participate in democracy in that way and understand how it is we are being informed as legislators.
You know, I hear a lot of people who complain. People love to hate government. And I don't think government's bad. I think there's bad people in government, but there's bad people in anything. But two, that people often say, oh, well, there's backroom deals and, you know, it's all shady. But so much of it actually is open enough and there are ways to get involved that at some point you can tell people, you can find out about this. There's a lot of ways that you can make yourself an informed citizen. You don't have to think the worst of people just because they're in politics.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's also politics in everything we do in this world. So private sector jobs are also political.
Right.
And this is the difference of this is that we're making the laws that affect your day-to-day life. And I think when you're thinking about running for office or helping somebody else run for office, you do want to make sure that you're supporting people who believe in transparency and believe in making it clear what their positions are and why it is they hold those positions. And I agree with you, there's many opportunities to see how government is functioning, what it means, and how decisions are being made.
So the podcast is called You Should Run. It's 2020, and in a lot of states, people are starting to get petitions signed to get on the ballot. I'm getting petitions signed for a couple people who I know who are running for office in my state. Why should people decide now to run for office, and you know, what kind of voices do we need getting involved in this coming election?
I think people should decide to run for office, one, if there's an issue that you really care about that you want to make sure people are paying attention to. It's a great way to bring it to the forefront. Even if you don't win, you've changed the conversation about what that issue is in your state or your community, and that is a really important service that you can do. Two, we need to make sure that the people who we elect represent the diversity of our state and our cities and our country, and therefore there's a real opportunity to change who is elected, to make sure that we are growing towards that diversity. And I guess the thing is that people often ask me if there was a, you know, moment that I decided that I was absolutely going to run for office. And the reality is, I think you just have to decide to do it. And there's no perfect moment. Like many of the big decisions we make in our lives, it's just kind of like, you know, you have to recognize it will be complicated and new and different, might be scary, might be super tough, but it is a growth experience, whether or not you win or lose. So it's a great opportunity to participate in democracy.
Terrific. And finally, what are you most hopeful for in this next year, in Rhode Island specifically? And right now I need some hope. I've been watching the news and I need some optimism.
You know, one of the things that I had learned from being elected under both the Obama administration and the Trump administration is the action happens in state houses. And we have so much capacity to change the day-to-day lives of people in our cities and our states. And so I am very hopeful for the ways we can continue to do that in Rhode Island. And certainly we could see that in places like Virginia, who've made tremendous change in just a couple of months already, or a few weeks already. So I'm hopeful for that in Rhode Island. I'm certainly hopeful for that around the country.
Great. Well, I'm hopeful you can get a lot done in Rhode Island. I hope that people who are listening will pay attention to Senator Gail Golden. And I hope that if you're listening, you'll decide to run for office too, if you see something that needs to change in your community. So if you're interested, follow Gail Golden, Senator, on Twitter, and see what's going on in Rhode Island. You don't want to miss it. And Providence is a place you want to go, especially in the summer. Thank you so much, Senator Golden, for participating, and good luck in Rhode Island.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.